I think there's all sorts of creative ways we can get around this, and I think the question of the pushback you're going to get is also, I think we just have to set up digital streams. If people want to express themselves, because this will, something like this will displace a lot of people, and people will bring up everything that happened 15 to 20 years ago when you start arguing these ideas. So the question is, how do we do it in a way where we take advantage of all the digital media that's now out here so we can avoid some sort of draconian, ruthless kind of Genghis Khan approach to just sweeping everybody off the air, which basically a lot of people will come up with and sit there and scream at you about. I personally would like to do far worse to some of them for a long time. They know that because I think they have dragged us into the mud. But in fairness to openness, we have to allow to have all sorts of vehicles so we can have lots of people express things and do it through digital media, I think. That's the way to balance all these things you're talking about.
Yeah, and I don't agree with the timeline. Maxie, I don't agree with the timelines. I've been around watching this BS go on for too long. I've had enough of it, and I just want to sit down there and crack the whip. That's all.
I'm as impatient as you. When I read your resolutions, and I read them all, I chuckled because you're very clear that you are ready for change, and I get it. I hear you. The key thing for me, though, and I know there's going to be pushback. And I dealt with this firsthand in Baltimore. I had 40 volunteers doing shows when I first got there. By the time I left, it was reduced to 20. Not because I was being hateful or not because I didn't respect or was trying to put strip programming. What I did was I really did a fine assessment of who was doing good quality programming, who was providing public service. And we realized that we could create vertical strips. We could create on Monday night programming that dealt with health, 2 hours worth, two different volunteer hosts who, in addition to being about health, one was a holistic health, other one was modern medicine. They could do special events where they could bring people health services or provide presentations around how to take care of yourself if you're low income on a more healthy diet. It allowed us outreach into the community in ways that was very impactful. I say all that to say that, the digital space is compelling. I think it's a shiny metal object out there. My only concern with it is that it takes a lot of resource to produce it, particularly when you've got programmers and producers who barely know how to do terrestrial radio. I know in one of your resolutions you talked about the need to assign producers. I don't know where those producers are coming from because the staffs are already shortchanged in terms of the producers for the radio signal. So, again, I love your ideas. My concern with the timeline with them is I just don't know if we are functionally, operationally able to meet the needs to make it happen. I love the ideas. I just don't think if we had $1 million thrown at us, maybe we could do a lot of this stuff, but based on where we are right now and what our priorities are with respect to funding, I'm looking at how can we do some minor things, employ some best practices, and kind of clean up some things that have significant impact, but also don't cost us a boatload of money to execute.
Well, let me just respond to something you just said. I think that, I'll just give you some examples here. We in New York were very supportive of Occupy Wall Street down the street from us. One of the things I learned from that was that the kids were coming in and doing streaming. And they were doing streaming. And one of the quotes you saw was from Tom and the other people at KPFA to basically put on the website in a low-cost fashion a video streaming capability. We actually went to the streamers who were streaming Occupy Wall Street events, and one of them said, hey, you guys come over and do that for us. And because of inertia, because of a lot of things, we weren't able to implement those things. I think that we can if the spirit is there. With the journalism schools, Bergfeld and I went up to Columbia University. We persuaded the head of the radio training program up there to come up with us. And he was willing to do it. He was even offered time. So I think we can do a lot of things that we haven't even tried to do yet, and it's not a question of breaking somebody's ego or sort of value breaking. We just want to create a kick-ass network that can do things that will blow people's minds. That's
yeah, I agree. No, I don't disagree, and I think taking advantage of the university systems, the university networks, is a big one. I think a lot of the ascertainment work I spoke about, focus groups, research, all that can be done in partnership with universities. So there's a lot that I agree with you. And again, the other issue I have concern with respect to digital and streaming and things like that, one of the main reasons HD2 didn't work, not only was it never HD radio, was it never really put in the cars in the way that was necessary, like XM satellite radio was. But the second part of it is that the stations didn't have the resources to promote and market those additional streams. We don't promote and market what we do on the radio well. I can't imagine how we're going to do that for what we're streaming and doing online. That's my concern. It's not that the ideas aren't good. It's just that we're not even ready to do the work necessary to execute what you're speaking about, although I completely agree it would make us a much more dynamic media outlet.
Well, the last thing is, you know, we already have something on the air right now. I know he's controversial, but Lenny Lopez had about 45,000 people an hour listening.
Yeah.
We only have less than 10% of that. Now, that's a clear example of people right now not marketing him being on the air.
You're right.
At least attract some of the people at NYC who were so fervent in losing him. And I know
that's
that it's a controversial issue, but nevertheless, I know you know the stats. Catherine knows the stats. The Gary Noe audience and the Lenny Lopez audience more or less are co-equal. So, and the issue of Amy not advertising, or Amy used to actually break into her time and allow people to go do station IDs. I guess.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Let me just say this, Jim. I'm gonna schedule a meeting with her. One of her main producers is a woman who used to work for me in Baltimore. And I had reached out before I even got this job in hopes to begin the process of setting up an opportunity to meet with her. Because one thing is clear. Anytime you have a national program and you're on our five stations amongst the affiliates in addition to that, she has an obligation to avail her program for fundraising and for other business to be done during the time that she's on the air. And whether she provides music beds or cut-in opportunities, she's got to do something to make that program more agreeable with our needs from a business standpoint. And it's just egregious that she's moved in a direction that doesn't facilitate that. And so I look forward to meeting with her and talking to her to make sure that we can design something that would allow our stations to cut in and utilize her program more effectively. Because the bottom line is, she better be careful, because if we do get right side up and we're in a position to bring something else into the mix, she'd be the first to go, all things being equal, because she has been so difficult for us to work with.
Catherine, this is Eric.
Okay, so, Eric, look. Yes, sir, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, and as much as we are being streamed, I wasn't sure if Maxie was aware of that.
No, I'm aware of it, and I don't mean a threat. I don't mean to put a threat out to her or her show. What I'm simply saying is, as partners, as we are carrying her program and she's producing it, it only makes sense that she should facilitate our need to do business on her program to raise money and to be able to promote what's coming up next, if nothing else.
No, that's fine. I thought you might be drifting into a legal matter.
No, not at all. I'm very clear that we're on. And again, it wasn't meant to be a threat. I'm simply saying that the relationship, the business relationship, should necessitate her providing space for us to do what we need to do to monetize that program as best we can, because that's why you carry syndicated programming is usually the acquisition cost is cheaper than producing it yourself. And the name recognition has promotional capacity, and you're able to promote and underwrite on it, or member drive, or however you raise your money. You're able to create revenue opportunities because of that program. And for her not to have that option available to us doesn't make any sense. So it, something went awry, and we need to get it corrected. But thank you.
And I think, all right, thank you. We probably should go on. I would like to follow up and say that this is really not a single person issue. It's true of anything that we're bringing in from the outside. And there are lots of shows potentially that would include, whether it's a weekly show or a daily show.
Yeah.
It needs to be part of the initial conversation, I would think.
You're right. Well, thanks for the time,
okay.
Everybody. I'm going to stay on.
All right,
thanks for letting me have a chance to present.
Thank you very much for being here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, next up on our agenda is resolutions. So we have traffic management and training resolutions. So, Jim, do you want to read your resolutions?
Yeah. Let me just read the revised one I sent you guys a little earlier today. Although I did have a problem with the computer, and the computer is now acting up again. But let's see. The main thing I did in revising this was this is the traffic management resolution, was the issue that Eric raised about, the long-form music not being interrupted, which I agree with 100%. And one of the things I thought, and here's where perhaps I don't necessarily agree with Maxie, I think that the digital media offers us a way to exploit, let's say we decide to put on a for 2 or 3 hours.
I think it has good indicators.
Can someone mute? If someone needs to mute, please mute.
Okay. We could have underneath a long-form music being played, a special of Thelonious Monk or Johann Sebastian Bach, for that matter. We could be advertising ourselves and branding ourselves as a place where uncut music is played. Because we all know how music is now fragmented in the past 20 to 30 years in radio, or ever since satellites were invented, actually going back in the 50s. So what I think would be interesting in experimenting is to have a vigorous social media sort of chat going on while long-form pieces are being played, so people could then interact. And that would be the station ID going on, while you're playing. You're saying here is uncut, we're playing a 30-minute piece of music. In other words, do something different than what is currently done with the music programming. And then the issue of radio imaging, I totally agree with Maxie on that. That's precisely what we have to integrate creatively. And I threw in there just what is meant by that, and I'll read that out. Radio imaging refers to the use of distinctive sounds, music, or sung jingles to sonically brand your radio station. In other words, distinctive sounds is a pretty broad stroke. It has the effect of drawing in listeners, making your station stand out above your competitors, and building excitement about an upcoming radio show. So you could have station-wide radio imaging, which aims to identify a station as a whole, and imaging, which is specific to a certain radio show. In other words, you could have it simultaneously be cleverly integrated into shows that are in morning and afternoon drive. So those are the kind of things I just threw into the resolution, and I didn't get any feedback from some people. Please give me feedback. The question of these time schedules, I think, are important to put into these things. I think that we have to begin to hold the not only management teams responsible, and a great, and everyone wants to be flexible about this. I understand the depth of the problems. I agree with Maxie about this, but I also think we just have to sort of put things in place where, okay, let's see how you guys can perform. And it's not just simply the onus of burden is on a couple of people, because I always feel it's unfair, given the level of problems that exist at each station, to then have this sort of the buck stops here approach to management. That is, if the manager or the GM or the PD do not produce something, hence they're responsible. And we know that it's more complicated than that, It's much more complicated than that. The producers have to be held accountable to some of this, too. They're not innocent in this picture. So that's the main thing I put in there. The other resolution I wanted to bring up was the resolution of the training, which I'll develop more, but the resolution that Tom Voorhees sent me, which I also modified, that I do think we have to have video, you know, imaging and YouTube-type functions on the main websites of the station, and they have to be treated as valid as what's going on terrestrially on the air. We just have to move into the 21st century. And we don't have to talk today. I will refine them. Please give me content and criticism in your written responses, but I do want to have us talk more seriously about this down the road.
Would anyone like to respond to be on the staff for this? Okay. Hearing no one speak up. The next thing I have down is compiling a programmer's handbook, and this was suggested at the last meeting. I forget who it was who suggested it. I think it was Grace. But the idea of instead of or in tandem with having these motions, we work on an actual handbook that could be codified, I guess, by the PNB to give guidance to everyone involved. So, and some of the subjects, radio as art and service to listeners, which we have been speaking of, I would like to certainly see just put together all of these ideas begin to be worked on as a programmer's handbook. In order to hold someone accountable, we should tell them what the rules are.
Maxie to the staff.
Yes, Max. Yes,
Max. I'm going to offer a suggestion that instead of this being something that comes from the board or a committee, that you actually perhaps come up with a resolution to put in place that the programmers have to create a collective that comes together and puts this together. We have five program directors at our stations who we hope should be competent enough to put together this kind of material. I can work with them myself as well, but my point is, you would hope that the program directors we've employed have more time, energy, and even skill, knowledge to be able to put together this kind of handbook, not only for the programmers, but for themselves. And so I would suggest fashioning the resolution in a way that puts the onus on the program directors to form a continuing, committee or subgroup or whatever that can meet quarterly or whatever to define this handbook and to update it as need be. But it should come from people who are operating as program directors, in my opinion.
This is Grace.
Okay. Anyone else? Grace, go ahead. Grace?
Hello? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
I think, of course, there should be some input from the program directors. However, across the network, I think there's a new, very new program director at WBAI. Our program director at KPFK has only been on the job for 2 weeks. I believe there may be no program director or new program director at KPFA, possibly no program director at KPFT. I don't know about WPFW. So but that's not really what I was going to say. What I was going to say is that I believe there's a KPFK programmer's handbook. I think it may be floating around my house. It's from a while back, but I think it'd be easier to start from that and revise it. And I also think that Jim has put together some very excellent stuff. It just needs to be, I think it would be digested more easily in a handbook form, and then from the handbook give suggestions or pass resolutions for implementation of certain sections of the handbook once we get it formulated. But I don't think that should slow down resolutions that he wants to put forward that are timely and could help us improve our operations. I hope that makes sense.
Jim to the stack.
Let me see if anyone else would like to speak. I know that I would like to speak. Anyone else who hasn't spoken yet? Jim, do you mind if I speak before you come back in?
Of course.
I don't think it's necessary to abridge anything that is being submitted by Jim. However, these motions, if the past is any indications, these motions are not going to get to the programmers. They may get to the staff, but they have there's no binding. It's going to be difficult to hold them to all these separate motions, and I happen to think that it would be better presented as a series of recommendations, maybe to the staff first to finalize it, or the staff can make recommendations to us and it be approved by the board. However, my concern in the immediate is that we're taking immediate steps, we're taking immediate movements, we're speaking about what the programs are doing wrong. They're all egotistical, they're trying to support their shows, and I'm just aware that there hasn't been training at least in the last 5 years. So I'm just saying that there needs to be some guidance that's significant if we're going to be moving on these other changes. So whether the board does it, whether the staff does it, I just feel that it's a just thing to do to provide the producers with what they're expected to do and the attitude they're expected to hold and the kind of presentation they're expected to have on the air. I just think that it's absolutely necessary as changes are being made based on those guidelines. So however that happens, it needs to happen. Yes.
But yes, we
are we out of time?
No, we have 10 minutes. Would you want to extend for another 15 minutes?
Yes.
15 minutes. Okay. we're going to end with you, Jim, here. And then go on. Are there any objections to extending for 15 minutes? Hearing none, we're extended for 15 minutes. Okay, Jim.
Well, you know, I hear what Kathy's saying, and, you know, I can be a little hard about it because, you know, I've been watching, as everybody, this situation go into slow-mo for quite a long time. And my sole objective is to really get it back on track. I don't think we should wait around for, figuring out a handbook. I'm talking about policy being implemented. I don't want to be misunderstood. I really want to see direct things done. I don't think it's difficult in January of this year to have every program director start to teach people how to do IDs and how to do forward promotion on the air. I think that if they don't know how to do that, as a program director, well, I got to say they shouldn't be in the job. And I just don't think that, you know, I think the situation is there's so many different working parts to the situation that we really have to start, you know, start somewhere and start little, but start doing it as soon as possible and do it in a positive way. Because I do think in the case of some producers, well, some of these people have been on the air for several decades and many of them know good practices, but there's no sharing of the good practices, but at the same time, I'm thinking about how, you know, if we have shows that are only making, X dollars an hour, and I know it's hard to raise money on the air, we still have to figure a way to do the kind of things that, you know, Maxie's talking about, have synchronization, et cetera, but not be foolish about this, and that is basically, I know how producers can lay little traps. Where they can say, oh, well, you know, we already do these things and we'll work with you because they don't want any change. They want to say, well, put roadblock in.
Jim, please. You know, I think it's time that, if you would, not make assumptions about, in every instance, about where people are coming from. I understand the concerns, but.
Well,
I think that the reason that I'm even saying anything is because.
Right.
it really raises a red flag for me when that's always, always, you know, the comments to me don't seem
yeah, but
fair.
In any event, we're over your time allotment.
Well, I want to finish my comment. It may be a red flag, but it's a red flag to me that there's such inertia and such unwillingness to change that we have to get to these kind of levels of discussion. And so that's why I have to be very blunt about that kind of stuff. I do apologize, but I've seen this as you have. I have a different perspective about it. I've seen it for several decades, and I'm sick and tired of us being having mediocre impact. That's my basic problem with all this.
Okay, good enough. Our next topic is creating, if anyone wants to speak of this, we talked about creating something, some kind of questionnaire or feedback form to send out to listeners, more specifically to people who pledge, asking for some of this feedback that we need. It came up last meeting. So does anyone want to speak on that or just have an idea about that?
Ken, I can speak on that.
Go ahead, Ken.
The GM at KPFK did an online survey through the Internet.
Okay.
Probably SurveyMonkey to our listeners. And he got results back. And he got demographics back. And he got positions back. You know, I could go look up what the results are. I'm sure I downloaded them. But the point is, these are not things that have to be done by committee. This is something that can be done by management. You get somebody to generate a survey and do it online and just do it to people that are streaming. Or you connect it into where people download. Would you like to take a survey? It's not a kind of a thing where you want to do an email push. You're just better off, or however it's distributed. I'm just saying it's better to do it electronically, and I think it's going to be more comprehensive and more effective to have it being done by a staff member, not by the governance committee, or like making up a survey. I think we bit too much off when we did that grandiose questionnaire and, you know, what do you think of the North Pole and what's your favorite radio station? Whoever we were asking, all of those questions covertly trying to indicate what we were interested in hearing about. It's too much. Grace just mentioned, the current program directors are new or tentative, or they do or don't exist. And they don't necessarily, we know one, I don't know what the experiences of these programmers. So if they came from, they were managing an ice skating ring, they're going to try to use that knowledge to be program directors. They're not necessarily going to know about radio or program directing. So I'm just saying that to doing surveys of the public, it's something that has to be done in high volume, and the best way to do that now is through the Internet. But, you know, if we're not in a position now where we can command the webmasters to integrate a system like Yahoo has regarding our programming. That would be the most direct way to find out what programming is popular. So we're not doing that. But, you know, I don't think we can push that through with the programmers. With the staff. So I'm just saying that the mission of surveying the public to find out what they want, I consider to be way beyond our scope at this time. I may much more prefer to deal with a concrete action like, you know, encouraging or demanding that programmers do station identification and tagged in other programs, or that cards are played. You know, something is done because that's all within our control. It doesn't have to do with anybody else's opinions or participation. It just has to do with our board operators playing cards. Tune in tonight to so-and-so who's talking to so-and-so or this or that or whatever to forward promote. It doesn't even really require the programmers. It's just a management task. But we can implement that because we have some kind of control over our programmers And if we don't, we should acquire it. You can have, you know, tell the programmers, please tell everybody that this is KPFK. You know, so I don't think the surveys of the public is appropriate. But I do want to say that the general manager at KPFK ran a survey. I will distribute the results of that survey after this meeting tonight to all the members of this committee.
I think it would be useful, Ken, if you could actually distribute what the survey said. I'm putting myself on the stack, but does anyone else want to speak on this?
Yes, I would.
And who's that?
Jim, I would like to speak on it.
Thank you. Could someone please mute if you're not speaking? Go ahead, Jim.
Yes.
Are you there?
I'm all in favor. Yes, I'm here. I'm all in favor of us doing surveys. Bertel and I, a few years ago, composed a survey. We didn't send it out, so I sort of blame myself. But I think we need to get as much different kinds of information from the listeners as possible. I think every single premium that goes out of the station should have a written, like, a survey, and it should be changed up. It's like playing baseball. You need to get that information from the listeners as much as possible. And every premium should, one of the resolutions is a common sense one. It's based on one day Bertel and I actually putting together a survey. We didn't do it. I blame myself for that. But we need all sorts of information from the listeners. I personally, when we were dealing with the premium problems, talked to several hundred listeners. And I used that as an opportunity to have a focus group with them to ask them what they thought. And they were terrific. They were great to talk to. But we need that kind of information coming in to management, to staff, to let them know the kind of things that people are thinking of, because our support is based on the people, not corporations, and unfortunately not CPB, which I'd like at some point, Maxie, to give us an update on at another time perhaps. But I do think we need as much information as possible from listeners from all sorts of different ways, and I think we can do it immediately.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to speak. I agree with that. I think that we should be sending surveys. It may not be for the board to do, but I know that when we have sent out surveys and put in a return envelope and asked people to make a donation and send it in, very often a percentage of people will send in a donation with their survey. And also, I don't know about the other stations, but WBAI has a monthly newsletter and is in contact with many more people than are actually pledging members, or there may be people who have pledged and would be willing to do more. So I think that there are many points of communication, and one of the things that I hear most from listeners, because I do engage in a lot of community situations, is that they desire to be in touch. They desire to be heard. And that is also a way of increasing support. So that's my perspective. Max, you go ahead.
A couple of quick things. I think doing research on your audience is great. It certainly can help you understand your core audience more intimately. I think some key questions might be, what is the motivating factor for them to listen? Why do they give, for those who do? That might help create the campaigns not only to facilitate more listenership but also more giving, to understand why those who do it. But I think there's also an importance that needs to be attached to interviewing, focus grouping, surveying people who don't listen to us but who should. And so, again, when you do the community mapping and articulate who we should be reaching, there's an opportunity to go out and connect with those communities, those social organizations, those affinity groups, et cetera, and do focus groups with them to understand what it would take for us to be a useful resource to them. There was something else I wanted to say. It takes about 3 years for a listener to convert into a member. So just always remember that in your calculations in terms of the fact that we've got all these people who receive the newsletter. This cultivation processes, there's a cultivation best practices that need to be thought about to transition them into being major individual donors. So just want to lay those two out, those few comments out.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else?
Yes, I just want to add to something that was just said. I discovered when I made all those several hundred phone calls and was resolving premium problems, because I was calling people who did not get their premium, so that's another issue. But overwhelmingly, they had goodwill to the station. They did not want to see it fall. They were perfectly willing in the overwhelming majority of cases to take other options to satisfy the premium not being delivered. And it showed me that there was a tremendous amount of grassroots goodwill, regardless of all the Meshuggah nonsense that goes on, to the station. And I should also add that outside the core listeners, because I'm well aware of how old Arbitrons used to be, they used to break it down into the core fanatics who listened all the time, which was about 10% of the BAIQ, and then they would have other different relations. I always found, whenever I was going to foundations, I would find that the people who were in charge of the foundations tended to be baby boomers and also had a positive attitude towards BAI, although they weren't happy with what's going on right now. So that says to me that things can change rather rapidly if we are using a lot of good positive energy and trying to accomplish that aim. It can resolve itself and turn on a dime pretty fast if we're not being stupid about it.
Okay. Anyone else? We're close to reaching the end. This may fit under the same category. Evaluate listenership in terms of where they're listening from. So that might just be another question that would be recommended to whatever process is going to be done.
We have 10 minutes left, Madam Chair. We have 10 minutes left.
All right. So we are down to new business. So can you have a motion you want to read and motivate? Ken? Unmute.
Maxie to the stack as well.
Okay. Well, Maxie, why don't you go ahead while we're waiting?
I was talking into a muted phone. I'm back. Should I proceed?
Yeah, please.
Yes, Maxie, please.
Okay. I'm bringing this motion up because we have some controversial programmers.
Ken, hold on just a minute.
Yes. I don't mind waiting on Ken if you want to let him go first. I don't mind. I'll wait.
All right. Go ahead, Ken.
I'm bringing this up because we have some controversial programmers with whom I completely disagree but really adore because they strongly make their case on certain political issues and controversial subjects, which I think is the heart, the soul of Pacifica. You certainly don't want to agree with everything on Pacifica, and you do want to agree with some of it or all of it, but I mean, you know. It's got to have controversy. It gets listeners. Anyhow, this is the problem that we have to. We don't want to get caught and offend people. So the motion is called. I'm calling it Broadcasting Disclaimer Cards. The executive director shall institute and monitor the use of disclaimers managed by the general managers and program directors of each station. It is expected that this policy will be fully implemented in the second quarter of fiscal year 2019, between January and March of 2019. The guidelines for this function are as follows. 1. Disclaimer cards will be broadcast prior to, during, and after the broadcast of any material deemed controversial and or dealing with sensitive material as determined by the program director or general manager. Disclaimer cards will also be broadcast prior to any and all live call-in segments that allow for general public to participate in the broadcast. 2. Board operators will be tasked with implementing the broadcast of the disclaimer cards and maintaining a separate online log of all instances of the disclaimer cards being broadcast, including the date, time, and program. 3, the format and content of the disclaimer cards may be modified at the discretion of the program director and the general manager, who has, the general manager has final authority on the nature and use of the disclaimer cards. The general nature of a disclaimer card is as follows. So here we go. This is what we're talking about. The views expressed during this program do not necessarily reflect the positions, strategies, or opinions of this station or the Pacifica Foundation. So that's a disclaimer card. The narration of the disclaimer card may be by any individual, including the program. However, the narrator will not be identified. All the above applies to programs streamed or available for download on the Internet. And that was 4 and 5. Last paragraph here is 6. Policy on disclaimers for material produced and distributed by the Pacifica Radio Archive will be covered separately. So that's to say that this policy doesn't apply to CDs made by PRA, and that's another legal issue, and I don't want to tackle that. But we do want to have disclaimers so that we don't get wrapped up with disputes. So that's the motion.
Yeah, okay. This is Eric. I'd like to go to the stack.
Okay, Eric, let me ask, is anyone seconding this motion?
What was that?
Who's that?
I'll second it.
Seconds are not needed in committee.
Okay, very good. Go ahead, Eric.
The last time I checked, this is not CNN or NPR. I don't think there's anything that comes on PFW that's somebody somewhere that's not considered controversial, you know, or sensitive. I mean, I'm not sure you're saying that the PD or the GM would make that call. You know, last time I checked, they're not available to listen to each and every program ahead of time. I'll make this quick. I know we're running out of time. I mean, I'm actually shocked at what I'm hearing. Quite frankly, I think you owe this committee an apology for even bringing that up.
Okay, can I respond to that?
Please.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, Catherine.
A program was taken off the air at KPFA because of comments made by somebody she interviewed. They decided to cancel the program and strip it from the archives because there's no disclaimers were made. So I don't know what programs you're listening to. Maybe you're avoiding one, or maybe you totally agree with everything that's said. We have people on programs who disparage homosexuals and Jews, and we broadcast those programs. We have programs where people disparage the President of the United States, and we broadcast those programs. There's lots of disparagement and, you know, statements to make. Some programs might say HIV is not a real disease. Some programs might say you have to eat prunes for 4 days, and that's the way to cure any disease. We have
clearly
to have disclaimers.
Clearly somebody's dropped the ball if that was allowed to get on the air in the first place.
Maxie to the
No, but that's the purpose of disclaimers. That's the purpose of disclaimers.
The disclaimer is not the solution. It shouldn't be on the air.
Let me jump in, gentlemen.
Let me make a point on that. Once you make a gatekeeper, you may decide what you don't think should be on the air, but somebody else might decide that you shouldn't be on the air. The way around this, the way to maintain uncensored free speech radio is to put a disclaimer. We're airing this so that people can state their views. It doesn't mean we necessarily agree with them.
Saying that you hate Jews and homosexuals and putting a disclaimer ahead of it solves nothing.
Okay, that's fine. I call for a vote.
Ken, you're out of time. That's it, Scott.
Yeah, let me just say
that
it is general practice on all public affairs programming, whether it's controversial or not, to have a disclaimer that speaks to the fact that the views expressed may not represent those of the station, management, etc. That's common practice at most nonprofit media to have a disclaimer, regardless of whether the program is controversial or not. So I would argue, instead of doing it for specific shows. You just make it a universal disclaimer that plays before any public affairs program so that you alleviate that issue.
Commissioner, okay. we have three minutes left.
Okay.
I had a subject I wanted to bring up real quick, but
who's that?
This is Maxie again.
Yes, go ahead, Maxie.
Someone asked me just to update CTV. I just was confirmed today for a meeting on January 16th, which is, I believe, Wednesday, to meet with the folks at CPB. It'll be my first meeting with them in this capacity, and it'll be an opportunity to get the full picture of what it's going to take for us to get back in the good graces of CPB, as told by the folks who are in charge of radio operations, over at CPB. So, again, January 16th is the date on that.
Okay.
Excellent.
All right.
Excellent.
Thank you. So we have 2 minutes and 10. You've received some suggestions. Would you consider resending your motion if you accept any of these suggestions, and we can vote on it at the next meeting?
No, I prefer we vote on it now.
Okay.
We may be out of business at the next meeting. I'd rather call for it now. And I just want to point out one last statement. This is all under the guidance and tutelage of the ED and the general managers. And they can use the disclaimers as appropriate. It's not a ham-handed thing and forcing it or anything. It's to use it as appropriate with intelligence. That's what it says. At the discretion of the program directors and the general managers. As implemented, and the executive director will monitor it. So if the executive director decides it should be for all public appearance programs, that's fine. I just want to get it implemented. Because as Maxie said, it's common practice in all nonprofit radio stations.
Your time has expired. Madam Chair, I'm going to ask that you rule the motion out of order. I mean, we're hearing general terms like sensitive, intelligence, controversial. It's not definitive. It's way too vague. I'm going to ask that that it's modified somehow, but that it be ruled out of order, at least for the time being.
Okay, well, I'll accept that. I'm just putting you on, notifying you that we're not using disclaimers clauses at KPFK. And I've tried putting them in, and they go in for like a week or two.
All right. Could we extend for about 3 or 4 minutes? Because the issue, I know what the issue is, and I think we just should lay it out a little bit more specifically, because it's something that is pretty controversial. I know that.
Is there any objection to extending for 5 minutes? Okay, hearing none. I also would like to speak before you come back in, Jim, if you don't mind. I just
sure,
want to say I agree that it needs to be universal and not targeted to an individual producer. It creates I think it creates the same danger as anything else, and who people would be singled out in ways that could be detrimental as well. So, Jim.
Grace for this? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eric,
Jim,
yeah,
and then
Eric,
Grace.
I think there's really, I agree with you, Eric, and I also agree with Ken on this. And I personally found the comments that he's referring to, that is that somebody was on the air in a show at Berkeley and was basically arguing that the what happened in Dachau, the reference was, I believe, Dachau, was overestimated, and that there wasn't really, the people actually had a sort of very, very easy time of it. And I spent a year interviewing people who actually went into Dachau in 1945, so I took great, great offense to that comment. However, the issue of having speech on the air and having it controversial is a important one and a distinction that Pacifica is noted for. And so that's where I tend to agree with Ken. You know, this is a very we all know these kind of things. People will skin on the air and say things that piss people off, and that's what it's about. But the question of this kind of stuff, this actually got her taken off the air, that show, and this is Bonnie Faulkner. And, you know, I don't want to get further into that, but it's a very important question that gets to the kernel of why Pacifica was set up to start with after the war, the mission statement itself, to foster understanding between peoples, and that's a pretty wide stroke, but this falls under it. I've had Nazis on the air when I did radio, and I always made it clear that afterwards I would provide, you know, counter this or counter that. But I felt that people should hear that stuff because it was important for those ideas to be heard and then refuted. So that's what this issue is about, and I, you know, I know it's a tough one.
Grace?
Hello. Yes. I agree with this motion, and especially when we have programming and also fund drives where hosts could be construed to be giving health and nutritional advice, and also offering premiums that purport to help anyone who uses them improve their health. This can generate lawsuits if we don't have disclaimers. It's absolutely necessary, definitely necessary, to protect ourselves legally by having disclaimers. And it's just a matter of fact that some programming is more controversial than other programming. If you have the weather, it's not going to be very controversial. But if you're talking about, for instance, one of the most hot-button issues is anything that's considered pro-Palestinian. That's considered by many people to be controversial. If we had something that was apologetic to the Israeli, incarceration of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, that might be considered controversial. There are some subjects that are more controversial, and I think that good judgment needs to be used with disclaimers, but I think disclaimers are necessary to protect ourselves legally.
Catherine, could I weigh in for about 15 seconds?
Yes.
You mentioned lawsuit. I guess that was Grace. A disclaimer does not preclude the possibility for lawsuit. If it came over your airwaves, it came over your airwaves. You know, simply saying, well, we don't support this point of view, but it came over your airwaves nonetheless. That changes nothing fundamentally. That's it.
Okay. So do we want to, I'll take a vote on this motion, and then we will adjourn. So, Grace Aaron. Grace,
yes.
Aaron?
Yes.
Ken Aaron?
Yes.
Okay, Wesley Bethune is not present. Catherine, I'm going to say no. Benito's not here. James Dingman?
Yes.
King Downing's not here. Anissa is not present. Dwayne Locke not present. Steve Pride not present. Eric Ramey?
No.
Tom Voorhees?
Yes.
Are you still present? Yes. Okay. All right. We have 4 yes. 1, 2, 3, 4 yes and 2 no's. So this motion carries. Okay. So,
I move to adjourn.
Yes. Very good. We are adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.